You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Munir, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, my kindreds out there. How are you? Wow. Another week unfolds as we find out more about the mystery of life and living here in the world of 2025. I tell you, before we start, let's say hey and give a shout out to our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker. Hi, Kevin. Look at the little cheeks. He is a senior real estate and probate specialist for Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He is there to fulfill all of your needs. Everything you need to know, he knows it. I'm serious, you guys. He really is that good. That's why he's my sponsor, and I'm talking about him. So again, senior real estate and probate specialist, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. Now back to our show. So the country is really going through it. I think the newest thing is that we're involving ourselves in the situation in Iran. So what determines, really quick, you know, my little commentary, what determines our involvement in war? From a Buddhistic perspective, war is a condition of anger or asura. It's not just about the word anger. It's one person, usually two people, that don't see eye to eye, that one person wants to dominate the other person through an aggressive act or domination rather than making the situation harmonious. Not a lot of people know how to do that from what I can see. And so that's what anger is. It's almost like a competitiveness, self-righteousness. Someone is desire to dominate or try to feel superior to another person. We all, the last time I checked, we all are born, we live, we get old, we get sick, and we die. There is no one on this planet that I have seen since I've been alive, which has been quite a while, come back from the dead and say they, whatever happened to them, I've never seen it. I've never talked to them. I don't see anybody else. It would be a worldwide news. Everything would shut down if that happens. So let's just all try to understand that we are all here together to work through various problems and situations and conditions, regardless of what our circumstances are. We deserve, each one of us deserve the highest amount of respect. And I'm here to give it to you today. And we're going to go right into our guest who knows all about these kind of things. He's been through many doors in life, all leading to change, growth, and a deeper understanding of what the meaning of life might be. His journey of heartbreak and betrayal within the safety of the creative Hollywood community, and his role of Almanzo Wilder, the wonderful book series based on Laurel Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie. My guest, Dean Butler, a man after my own heart. Hey, Dean.
Wow. Hi, Osiris. How are you? You know, it's interesting. We talked before we came on Osiris. On Little House, we said Almanzo. We should have said Almanzo.
Almanzo.
Yeah. And then throughout the series, I was Almanzo, Zaldamo, Alamanzi, Manny. I mean, I had all these different names. So I always need to check and see what the correct name is.
So is it Almanzo or Almanzo? It seemed like
It's actually, well, but you know, Almanzo. And the clue is right in the first introduction that he has on the character has on the program where, you know, my sister says Laura to Laura Ingalls, who is Melissa Gilbert, obviously, uh-huh. said, you know, Laura, I'd like you to meet my brother Almanzo. And he says, because this is the way it's written, pleasure to meet you, Laura. My friends call me Manny.
Oh.
And then she says, pleasure to meet you, Manly. And then that becomes the whole thing. That's the whole but how we got from Almanzo to Manny to Manly, instead of I'm Almanzo, this is my brother Almanzo, pleasure to, my friends call me Manny, she calls me man, then that would have all sort of made sense. Now, at the time, no one questioned that. There just wasn't going to be any question about that. And I was, it was my first hours on the set. There was no way that that was going to be a topic that was going to come out of my mouth. But we got letters right away. So I mean, names are important. You know, what we call people, it's important. It's you.
Really?
Yeah.
They really are. And there are people that will get upset if you don't say their name right. I've gone to other countries.
Sure.
I'm a Buddhist, so I meet a lot of people from Japan and China and all the other Asian countries, Pacific Islands, everywhere all over the world. And if you say the wrong name, they will correct you because a name can mean different things depending on where you live and what the situation is and all of that.
Of course.
Speaking of wonderful, beautiful names, Dean Butler, actor, producer, director, and author. I want to talk to you and we want to hear, how was it to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Loving Little House? And was there a doc on it? I think the name of the television is called Cozy, COZITV.
Yes.
COZI. How was that? And then we'll talk a little bit about the book. Go ahead.
Well, Cozy is one of the sort of basic one of the basic cable channels that has been running Little House for years. And I think they run it, depending on the time of year, they run it two or three hours a day. And they have been that company has been Cozy is wholly owned by NBC. They do this sort of vintage television schedule. And we are part of that schedule with a lot of other programs from other eras. And they've been fantastic. We did, you know, as a means of promoting, I mean, Cozy became one of the sponsors of our 50th anniversary event in Simi Valley. They ran promos for the event and, you know, Melissa Gilbert did promos for them and they ran those promos. And then they did little documentary packages about different cast members that ran, I think, interstitially on their air and also on their website. They were great. And then the other side of NBC, the strictly streaming side, which is called Peacock, for those who know that. Yeah, Peacock does a great job. Well, Peacock picked up Little House because they owned the rights to it. They owned the rights to the negative. They had the right to air it. They put it on Peacock during the pandemic, and it just did wonderfully well. Last year, during our 2024 50th anniversary year, Little House streamed 13.3 billion minutes, the equivalent of 25,000 years in a single year on Peacock. And that's just one of the places it airs. In addition to Cozy, you can watch it on Amazon Prime. You can watch it on iTunes. You can watch it on Roku. Roku has a 24/7 Little House channel. That's all it runs is Little House. You know, it's what's so wonderful. I mean, what it's amazing after 50 years, that people are still watching and loving the program. And it's such a validation of what Michael Landon set out to do, which was to create programming that would connect family, encourage people to sit and talk to each other. The program offers lessons about how to, maybe the positive ways to live. And what's sort of interesting, what is very interesting about it is the program, it's little, you know, it's morality plays. It's little morality plays because you get the examples of the good behavior and you also get the examples of the less than good behavior, which gives the audience an opportunity to choose who they want to be in a given scenario. And that's very important as a learning tool.
It really is. And a question arises with you saying that. Right now, this country is in turbulent times. The world is in turbulent times. Yeah. Where there is, when I grew up, you could actually, your neighbors would look out like, okay, I didn't see your kid come home yesterday or today. Where were they? Where were you? And then you could depend on maybe say to a neighbor, look, I won't be home. My kid's going to come by or whatever.
Yeah.
And the family structure was so important. And now I don't even know we have a family structure anymore. I mean, so one reason Little House, in my opinion, is doing and still around is because people need that. They want that. I want to feel like I can come home and yeah. bring my problems in my home and leave them out there. Leave them out there. Mm-hmm. How do we do that now? How does
I think Little House is certainly one of those things that allows. We hear this all the time, Osiris, from people that we do events, you know, and we meet people who come to see us from all over the country, from around the world, for precisely this reason. They talk about this all the time. They talk about Little House as being the safe place that they can come to, and regardless of what may be going on in their life, they get to see in the Ingles and in those positive role models in the community, in the Walnut Grove community, they get to see, if not fully functioning families all the time, but families striving to function all the time. And then you also see the example of the, and humorously presented, you get to see the example of the family that may not be functioning so well and behaving in a way that you sort of have to look, you know, sideways and say, what are you doing? But it always works out as was the style of the approach to episodic television. And you could, you know, in some ways you could write it off and say, well, that's just not the way the world is. It's like, you know, life doesn't have wrap ups in 48 minutes. I completely agree with that. I mean, that's not wrong. That's absolutely accurate. But what's really good about that structure is you do get in a condensed form an object lesson in living that you can, if it grabs your attention, maybe something sticks from that lesson that you can carry into the rest of your day-to-day life that may help you make a decision about something related to what you saw or completely unrelated to what you saw on the program, but tells you in very clear terms, because I think we fundamentally feel what's right.
We
know what's right. And if those things are processed, if that rightness is processed and becomes infused into your life, it can help you make in your life better decisions on all kinds of things. I'm listening to your introduction about where we are. And look, we have always had, in the world, there has always been a penchant for violence. There's always some group that's trying to dominate another group. And this energy exists on, I think, on the extreme fringes of the spectrums, of the political ideological spectrum. It's not in the middle. It's on the edges. And I think that we are all in times like this, we are all offered a time. Most of us live in some part of the spectrum that is center left, center right, up, down, but we hover around the center, most of us.
Right.
Unfortunately, the tough part is the agendas are set by those on the edges because that's where the greatest passion is. That's where the extreme beliefs are, is on the edges of the behavioral spectrum. But this is why we have elections. This is why our Constitution, if we can keep it, guarantees freedom of speech. We can say what we think. And I think it's important that we try and say it in a way that's respectful, but nonetheless, that we can say what we believe. And then it becomes a matter of developing a collective consciousness about the world that we want to have around us. I think this is, you mentioned that you are, did you, you were, you said you're Buddhist.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm a Buddhist because of how, what it believes in world peace and each person taking responsibility rather than making the external world responsible for our inner life, state of life. That's why I like being a Buddha.
Yeah, no, and I don't know anything about Buddhism, and I am, and I will tell you, that I am not a religious person. I wasn't raised in that space. I've never really sought it out, and I think one of the reasons I haven't sought it out is through the course of history, more people have died and been made miserable in the name of religion than by any other source in human history. And I have a problem with that. You know, this is, and it's not that there's something wrong with what's written in the religion. It's something that is a challenge in the people who are interpreting the religion. And the people who rise to leadership in a religion have a position, and the religious doctrine can be twisted to say whatever someone who is willing to twist it is willing to twist it to say. And I think this is really, I think this is basically why I'm not willing to listen to anything religious.
I understand. That's why I'm a Buddhist. I had gone through the gamut of all the different belief systems. No one told me that I had the power to change my own life until I became a Buddhist. Mm. And basically they teach you how to do the practice and then you're on your own. Mm. Like it's up to you to change your stuff. I don't know what to tell you about to do about your significant other, your children or whatever. That's your karmic circumstances. Everybody's circumstances is different. Are different. So that's why. But what I wanted to say and the point you brought up about how that's why you don't listen to anything. This is why.
Well, I listen, but I don't take it seriously.
Little House on the Prairie.
Interesting with Little House in terms of spiritual messaging. Michael was Jewish. And I don't know that he was a seriously practicing Jew, but he wore a Star of David around his neck. I mean, he identified as a Jewish man. Michael utilized a kind of a non-denominational, as much as there were talks of God and there were prayers and so on, but what was said generally was pretty, it was a non-denominational message. It was a message about we can look at the Ten Commandments as a religious thing, but I see it as the Ten Commandments are basic lessons for living that would apply to any religion, any way of living a positive, decent life. You could read the Ten Commandments and say, I get that. It doesn't matter. The religious association with the Ten Commandments is not really essential. It's the message of the Ten Commandments and what they are asking of us that's the most important thing. And I think that Michael he understood that there was a large portion of our audience, and it's not nearly as large a portion of the overall audience now. Back, in the 1970s, many more people in the United States identified spiritually in some denomination of Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism or whatever it would be, but many more people did. I think that today, that's a shrinking number of people. And I think it's, in my opinion, it's just my opinion. Others may have other reasons for it. But I think it is the challenge that religious institutions face is the level of readily apparent hypocrisy that seems to, you can say one thing, but people are doing another thing. And it's really, really challenging. It's very hard. It's very hard to get people to buy in fully when you have to close your eyes and look the other way at the people who are leading your religion and what they are in fact doing themselves. I think that there's definitely a place for a very important place for positive messaging about living aspirational, decent lives. My feeling is that messaging should not be, or is not useful. So I'll put it that way. It's not useful if the messaging says something like, we're the true religion and everybody else isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, we're the path to God, they're not. We're going to be okay, everybody else is going to hell. I mean, that's sort of a non-starter. You know, one of my favorite movies growing up, and it's not growing up, I was an adult by the time this movie came out, but I loved the way George Burns was written in Oh God, where he talked about, I mean, this was a very charming little movie.
Yeah, it was.
And I loved the way George Burns was written. And it was he was such a great choice to be this message, very dry, witty, but dry. And he talked about the fact that he put out lots of different paths for God puts out lots of different paths to get to him, to communicate with him. And some are overtly religious, others are not perhaps overtly religious, but there are many paths to get to those messages, the positive messages. And I love that because then there's a path for everybody. Then you don't have to go down one road. There isn't just one road. Churches want to tell you there is just one road, but I just don't think it's a winning message. In the big picture, there are many roads to get to something that is positive. I don't believe in afterlife.
I see you have that traditional thing. You know what I've learned? I'm just going to simply say this because it ties into what I'm about to ask you. What I've learned in just living life is that if you need to cut your grass and your grass is 10 feet tall, then although there are many tools that have been provided, there are certain tools that are better than others for cutting grass. So if you're going to cut your weeds in your yard with a lawnmower, that may not work. But if you get one of them weed hackers or one of those things that really can go in there, that's the tool you want to use. Same thing with religious or philosophical practices. In my opinion, anybody that has the money and the wealth to afford the highest and the best version of a car to drive every day is going to get that best version. Now, there's a lot of cars to drive that will get you where you got to go.
Right. Right.
They got good engine, everything. But the Rolls Royce of those cars are the cars of the elite and people that it can afford because they know the difference in the value. That's what I've learned. That's what I've seen. Yeah, a lot of people go, yeah, everything is the same. No, it's not. If you get into a Rolls Royce and drive it, it is so different than driving a Toyota or driving a this.
Sure.
Or driving that. That's all. When I talk to people about things, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to give you the highest, bestable possible way for you to live a human life every day and see results without you going out there and asking people to help you. It doesn't mean people aren't going to help you, but the helping starts with the person first understanding self. And a lot of people don't understand themselves. They live their whole life understanding everything else but themselves. And when there's no practice. A lot of people have philosophy. They have no practice. You can't go to the gym and expect to have your arms and your legs toned if you don't use the right gym equipment. You can actually hurt yourself.
Sure.
I think
that's true. Well, But to carry on with your example of gym, you know, there are many different kinds of weights that can get you this, that's get right. you the same result. I mean, there, I don't know that there is the perfect tool to sculpt your arms. There are probably combinations of tools that you could use to sculpt your arms and work on your abs and do all of that. Depending on what you do, and it's interesting, again, to follow up on the, and go back to the car example, there are places where if you're going to pick the vehicle, you don't want a Rolls Royce to get there. You want a Toyota Land Cruiser. Or you want a Ford F-150. It right. may be a different it knowing the two and the, so you're, you know, now you're back to the grass cutting thing. So what's the best tool? I think we all seek out what's I think that? it's powerful that we all have the power and the choice, the discretion to pick the tools we want to use. I think it's helpful that if we can, going down this path, if we're okay with the tools that different people choose. You know, someone, I may like a Toro lawnmower to do my lawn, and someone else wants a electric, you know, whatever that tool is. They want, both get the grass cut. Or they want that thing with the spinning nylon, and they because it cuts yeah. the trim, it trims the edges better, but it also cuts the grass. But knowing the figuring out the tool, the path that you want to take, you know, my feeling is as long as the path, I just would like to think that the paths we choose are hopefully not hurting other people. Oh, wow. I think there's a way of picking your path that isn't exclusionary or judgmental about what somebody else is doing. My father used to say to me in regards to human behavior, and I love this saying, and I don't spend a lot of time in bars, but you know, but he said to me, the world is a long bar. There's room for everybody at the bar. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be everybody's best friend, but there's room for everybody at the bar. And you can have your drink and this person can have this drink and, you know, and everybody can. And if everyone's just prepared to be accepting that other people are drinking something different than what you're drinking, everything can be okay. And I think we need more of that, more acceptance of different lawnmowers, more acceptance of the Rolls Royce versus the Toyota, more because they all serve a purpose.
Serve a purpose.
Yeah, they all serve a purpose. They all are tools. Everything is a path. We find different paths to our own happiness. And I think it's nice if we can be evolved enough to accept the fact that everybody else's path isn't our path.
That's right. We all have different things to learn in life and different roads to go down, which leads me back to your book. Prairie Man.
Okay. Wow. We're wandering all over here, aren't we?
Yes. No. It's good. Ties in a Little House on the Prairie. It's a family show that shows heart, spirit, love, and caring. They're not on. It's not a Western where they're shooting each other and the man's playing up on the wife and he's got a Little House on the Prairie. To me, was the show that I could depend that no, her husband's never going to have an affair. No, the kids aren't going to get kicked out. They're not going to be on drugs. It was just that wholesome kind of family life that everybody kind of wanted.
We had episodes where couples maybe thought their partner was having an affair, but then it all works out. But we had those episodes, it was a misunderstanding. What the cool thing about the way Little House was written is, with rare exception, it was always written in a way that was open. The audience knew everything. The audience saw all the circumstances. The characters didn't know everything about what the other ones were doing, but the audience always knew what was happening. And so the journey was to see the characters discover the truth in what was going on. They weren't looking for the truth. They knew the truth. And I think there was great comfort in that. The audience always knew what was going on with everybody. Now there are episodes There's an episode. And I was thinking about it yesterday. There's an episode later in the series called Sylvia, where Albert's girlfriend is raped by a man in a clown mask. I mean, a very gutsy story for Michael to tell in the Little House world. I'm sure NBC was sort of like, what are you doing? What's this show about? But anyway, he did it. Now, the audience didn't know who the rapist was, which was very unusual in Michael's structure. You generally always knew. In this case, you didn't know. Mm-hmm. And you discovered it at the end of the program. But that's one of the rare times that the audience didn't know everything. And look, Sylvia was, you know, definitely an outlier in terms of the kinds of episodes that were done. Mm-hmm. It was certainly a compelling episode. It had its moments of fear and anxiety, you know, and uncertainty and emotional stress and all of that, which was a hallmark of the program. Mm-hmm. But what was different was the audience really didn't know where this was going. Most shows, the audience did know, and it was just a matter of time before everybody was on the same page, and you got to watch it happen. You got to watch the discovery on the part of the characters. But you, as an audience member, for the most part, you always knew what was happening. And I think that's one of the things that made the program so comforting to watch, is because you knew the truth. You always knew the truth. The characters didn't know, but you did. And then you got to watch those lessons learned that got you to the truth. And I think that's one of the reasons why the program has been so instructive to people for so many years, because you never had to wonder, or rarely had to wonder, who was right and who was wrong. You knew. It was a matter of just watching the characters discover the truth.
And now in your book, you titled the book Prairie Man, My Little House, Life and Beyond. What do you mean about life and beyond? Because right now we're having conversation. The reason I did the commentary for this particular show is because I knew that because you did Little House on the Prairie, and you've been around a structure of a show that was a family-based kind of show. Mm-hmm. These kind of things would come up. What people's belief system are. You marry somebody, they're a Catholic, you're a Baptist or whatever, you know.
Right.
How do you get around these different differences in people and then make them into the family structure to be harmonious?
Yeah, I mean, look, that's a huge question.
You can answer it.
Well, I think I really think it's about acceptance. It's about the ability to accept that we have differences, that in our world today, we are not all coming from the same set of circumstances at all. There is population of the United States, as a global population, we live in vastly different circumstances. And within the boundaries of the city of Los Angeles, we live in vastly different circumstances. You know, I think, you know, my feeling about this is that unless someone is doing something to where I believe that someone is going to be doing something that's harming me or harming a family member or harming a member of my immediate community, if it's just a matter of living differently, you know, I'm going to be okay with that. Mm-hmm. I think it's a long bar, and I think we have the ability to, if we choose to, we can accept, we have the ability to choose or accept that different people are going to live differently. And I think over and over and over again in Little House, Michael Landon was telling, was making those points about people and circumstances. Yeah. I mean, he always, in a non-religious way, the characters always encouraged a kind of moral generosity and decency. But it was never, if you don't do it the way I do it, you're wrong. You know, there was no wrong. There were choices that people made. And he would, you know, the program encouraged a certain kind of thinking, but not restrictively for the most. It was, we have the ability to be, and look, if it gets, it's like sort of watching television. If the message is so uncomfortable, you just change the channel. If the message is on the screen, if it's not working for you, if people around you are creating difficulty, you can just turn and walk away.
You can.
You can absolutely make that choice. It's not necessary unless someone is threatening the overall. I mean, look, I went to one of the protests this last weekend.
You did?
I did. I went to the Beverly Hills one. It's very close to, you know, where we live. We live in Westwood. Mm-hmm. We went there. And it was a very peaceful gathering. I mean, look, some of the signage was provocative. There's still question. I mean, there was some pretty strong language. But everybody was, and there were people there who didn't agree. There were people who were walking around with their, you know, MAGA hats and making their statements. But there wasn't any direct, with the one exception where a guy did not like the message and he went and ripped the megaphone out of someone's hands who was making a statement. And people stepped in and they got the megaphone back and the young man was escorted away. He wasn't told to leave. He was just taken out of that circumstance right there, and he was allowed to stay, and he continued making his points that were pretty provocative, but they were not counter to the sort of larger message of the protest, but they were a little more violent in their mm-hmm. expression. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone wanted, you know, no one really as a group, the thousands of people who were there, were not looking to be violent. They were looking to
make a statement.
That could be seen and understood by lots of different people. And I think that's the nature of, I mean, I think that's protest at its health on a healthy level where we get to say if we don't like something and we get to say if we like it. I mean, there were people there saying that they liked it and they liked the way things were going. And there was no, other than the one guy, there was no banging heads. There was no, you know, there was nothing violent that happened. I'm not sure that that was the case all over the city of Los Angeles, but it certainly was not the, you know, the city was never burning to the ground during last weekend. The city was not on fire. Yeah, it wasn't that at all. And really, if you were paying attention, you know, it wasn't that. Everybody knows. Everybody who was paying attention knows it wasn't that. But it was people exercising their First Amendment right to express what they believe. Whether the truth is a very subjective thing.
Yeah. Their truth.
Yes, their truth.
Their truth.
Yes, I agree with that. It's their truth.
Do you think there will ever be, we got a quick break for our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Coldwell Banker.
Hi, Kevin.
Senior real estate probate specialist for Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508, 818-571-1508, Kevin Pike at Coldwell Banker. He will take care of your needs. Now back to Dean. Dean, do you think that right now, I mean, when we were growing up, this is what we had. We had Little House on the Prairie. We had The Cosby Show. Both shows, and we're not talking about Cosby. I'm talking about his show. His
I understand. No, I know where you're. I know where you're going.
You know, both shows were family shows. They were the only shows that anybody could watch. White families, black family, any family, as long as you were an American family, you had privy to those shows.
Yeah.
Whether or not it identified or we identified with a particular cultural aspect of a show was neither here nor there. The whole point is that they were both American shows that everyone loved and they were encouraging. Do you think that in these times we will ever have shows like that again, or those shows are necessary to have again to show unity and family, that there's still some of that goodness left?
I think that the audience has been carved up in such a fine way, given the profusion of streaming platforms, in addition to the broadcast networks, which have really changed, interestingly, from, you know, from purveyors of primetime programming that was comedy and drama. And that's all that is still there. But really what they're turning to is game shows, sports, and news. That's really what the networks are doing now. And there's still, and there may be some, you know, legitimate dispute about the fact that they are, you know, whether they are or are not still the most powerful distribution purveyor of information out there. I think they probably still are just because of their numbers, but the audience is carved up so finely now. I think what's interesting now is I think people who are making things the opportunity to make different, distinctly different kinds of programming has never been better than it is right now, because you are reaching, you have the capacity to reach the exact audience you're looking for, based on the demographics of who's watching that channel. And so it's just a question of, you have an idea or you know who that audience is and you want to make something, you're going to pitch to that network, that channel, that streamer, the program, an idea that that audience is going to be receptive to. Now, if it's really a breakout thing, you can pitch it out that maybe it starts off as something for your core audience, but then it grows. And of course, that's the nature of
the beauty.
Audiences find things if they work. But I think it's harder to speak to the mass audience. You know, those days of water cooler talk in the office or at school the next day when you've been watching something on, you're likely to have been home watching one of three networks, maybe different networks at different times during a given evening, but you had a really good chance of having a common experience with a lot of different people, because, you know, 20 million people are watching each one of these channels at a given time. During prime time, and maybe that number may be a little high, you know, and those numbers are much lower now. I mean, the metrics of success on television now are vastly different than what they were in the years that we were making Little House. It just is because of the number of outlets that there are. You know, Netflix is making Little House again. Now they've just started.
They're going to redo it.
They're doing it again. Little House. They're doing it again. They have acquired the rights to do the program from the family company that owns the film and television rights. And the program has been completely recast. It's being, you know, you're going back to the very beginning of what Little House was. It started in the pilot with Little House in the Big Woods and really went right to Little House on the Prairie, the third book. And I think that this series is really focusing, it may touch on the first book, but I think it's really focusing on the third book, which is, of course, the most popular title of Laura's books, Little House on the Prairie. And I think that the sense that I get is that the the stories are going to be much more closely tied to what Laura wrote in her books than perhaps what Michael did with our program, where Michael loved the environment, the tone of what the Little House books offer, but he had an interest in much different kinds of, very different kinds of stories than what Laura wrote about. It's not that he didn't touch on those stories, but Laura wrote about in her books what people did to survive, and she was wonderful at explaining in words what her family did at given times to survive in this world that they were living in. Michael, in his approach to Little House, really focused on what people felt about what they were doing. He didn't spend a lot of time teaching anyone how to plow a field or make bread
or mow a lawn.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't do that. We saw lessons in school where people are adding numbers and, you know, and they were practicing their reading, but it wasn't about learning how to read, and it wasn't about learning to do math. It was there was something else always going on around these activities, these normal everyday activities of life that everybody experiences. And so the context of living in the world was recognizable to the audience because they were, you know, seeing Pa chop wood, and they saw him, Ma, putting a meal on the table, and they saw the kids walking to school. I mean, these are things that everyone was doing. But what Michael delved into was the emotional life around the story that was the emphasis of that week's episode. Yeah. And so it became this wonderful emotional exploration, sometimes connecting to the books, most of the time not. The story that I was involved in, the Laura Almanzo story, was one of in the later books, was a very important thread in the life of the books. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I think, you know, what I was involved in has been so, I mean, I have been so blessed by the kinds of the emotional energy that comes at me as a result of having played this part. And it's because people read about this story in Laura's books, and they watched us do a different version of that story, slightly different version of that story in terms of what actually happens. But the journey was the journey from, you know, infatuation to love to marriage and building a life was the same. And I think that made it very
appealing.
It made it very appealing. So I think that the Little House series that we're going to see on Netflix probably in the summer of 2026, it will probably appear next summer. Yeah. I don't know that, but I'm thinking you can keep your eye open. Their Netflix is going to let you know where it is. They've cast it with a wonderfully attractive group of young actors, talented people. They're shooting in a beautiful environment in Canada. Yeah. So
we have to get out of here.
You do?
We're going to have you back because you've got so many stories to tell. Because one thing I want to ask you, between being this man is an actor, producer, and director, and I can tell by the depth that you're going into your discussion about what goes on at the networks and how Michael positioned the show to be able to be around now in 2025. They really did a fine job on positioning the show. So we need to hear your social media tags. Where can we keep up with what's happening with you, your book, Prairie Man, My Little House on the Prairie, which came out in June of last year. You can find it on Amazon. It's a bestseller.
Right.
Where can we find out more about what you're doing and how to keep up with you?
So I am on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. I am Official Dean Butler, all one word, in all three of those platforms. I'm blue checked on all those platforms, so you know it's me. I've been verified on all those platforms. So that's where anyone can follow me, Official Dean Butler. on those three platforms. And, you know, and then there are lots of Little House. There are so many different Little House platforms out there, and we link to everything and share everything. So if you want to know about Little House, there are lots of ways to find out. If you want to start with me, awesome.
I'd love on their website. So don't forget about me, Osiris, on Instagram.
Who can forget Osiris about you, Osiris?
Underscore Mounir, underscore the painter. On Instagram, I'm the same thing across board. Osiris, just look for Osiris. Not a lot of people in entertainment are named Osiris, especially with blonde, short, curly hair. Mm-hmm. So anyway, and then don't forget about Dean Sam Hassan at LA Talk Radio. We love you. Thank you for letting us shine every week and for me doing my show. Don't forget to like, subscribe to our channel. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dean Butler. This man is still around. I don't know you personally, but from the vibe I get over the screen, you're one of those men that anybody would love to take home and say, this is my boyfriend, this is my husband, this is my father, this is my uncle, this is my brother.
That's very sweet, Osiris. Thank you.
One of those kind of spirits.
My parents thank you for that.
Okay. Well, they can have that from me because we don't meet many people like that anymore. And to meet you is a treasure. And to know you is an honor. So that's it. Don't forget, I like you. I like you for the people that you are and what you're trying to do for yourself every day, facing your brave obstacles and things that try to get in the way when you're moving forward. And I love you because I love you because you're such beautiful people out there in the world. Okay, don't forget. Smile. It works wonders. And we'll see you next week. Bye, Dean.
Bye.
Bye.
You are listening to 15 Minutes, the show with Osiris Mounir, only on LA Talk Radio.